Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week with Health Minister Andrew Little, I asked him about Pharmac likely to end blanket funding for kids' cancer drugs and Parliament's motion yesterday to not condemn the events in China's Xinjiang province as genocide, but rather as, quote, human rights abuse. But I began with the health sector reforms and asking the minister to clarify if the Māori Health Authority will deliver health services to Māori.
The Māori Health Authority will have commissioning power, so it'll be able to commission services. It'll commission kaupapa Māori health services. We have those in place at the moment. Kaupapa Māori health services typically provide services to Māori and to Pākehā and other tangata tiriti. But because Māori get their health care from both kaupapa Māori health services and from the rest of the health system, the Māori Health Authority will be a way that Māori have a say in what happens elsewhere in the rest of the health system. The idea that there is somehow this sort of black and white delineation between getting your health care from services funded from one stream and services funded from another is a bit kind of wacky, to be honest. People move through the health system. What we need to make sure is we have a health system that is funded effectively or as effectively as possible, that it operates in a way that is accessible to as many as possible, and especially now to those who haven't or who have struggled to get access to it, and that is a large number of Māori, and that the quality of the care provided wherever it is given is right and respects cultural needs and what have you.
Okay, and that brings me on to my next question now. Recently, National leader Judith Collins made comments around the Māori Authority by saying it creates two systems by stealth and basically creates two health systems, one for Māori and one for non-Māori. What do you make of that?
I could not imagine a more dumb statement from a politician who frankly knows better. There are no two systems. There will be one New Zealand health system. And we'll have a Māori health authority that will give Māori some real powers, decision-making rights and decision-making powers and funding powers, that will work hand in glove with Health NZ, along with the Ministry of Health, to make sure that right across New Zealand and for every population grouping, good health care is available and is provided. It's not about separate systems, it's about one system, but recognising the Crown's obligations under the treaty to provide, you know, tinoranga teretanga for Māori, and also a system that seriously addresses the inequities that are in place at the moment, and the Māori Health Authority will assist with that as well.
Well, I know this is not part of your portfolio, but do you think this sort of reform should be extended to other areas?
I can't really speak for other areas. I'm not, I'm not close enough to that. Except that I think, you know, the government in New Zealand generally, over the last several decades, has struggled to make sure that it is respecting its obligations under the treaty and giving voice to Māori, and that has worked to a greater or lesser degree in various parts of government. But this is an approach, I think, in health now, given the kind of health services that are available, the building blocks that have been put in place, and most importantly, actually, the talent that is out there, some real great leadership talent across the health sector, Māori health leaders from other sort of backgrounds, that gives us the ability to do something really special in health. And the need is there, and you look at the figures and the disadvantage that Māori are at on average compared to anybody else going through the health system is absolutely palpable. I mean, you might say the same of Pacific people, actually, and we have an obligation to address the inequities for Pacific people, and we will do that. We'll beef up, you know, the means we have to get good decisions and good policy in terms of provision of health services to Pacific people. But we have a specific obligation under the treaty in the way we partner with Māori and give decision-making rights and tinoranga teretanga to Māori, and that's led us to where we've got to with the proposed change to the health system.
Right. Judith Collins said the government claims that the government is leaning heavily on a document called He Puapua that is produced by Te Puni Kōkiri that wants to make some more constitutional arrangements by 2040. Did you refer to that document while considering the health reforms?
No, I haven't, because that document hasn't been widely circulated. It certainly hasn't been circulated to other ministers, so I haven't even seen it. It hasn't been referred to me. I mean, the idea of a Māori Health Authority came out of the Health and Disability System Review, the report that came out last year. The proposal there in that review was a more modest one than the one we've adopted. We've gone further. I've drawn on my knowledge as Treaty Negotiations Minister, and just the advice and what have you that I've had access to as I've been putting together the health reforms. That's what's informed where we've gone. And Pēnei Henare, my colleague, has provided great leadership in terms of his engagement, particularly with a lot of Māori health providers and with a group who have led a claim in the Waitangi Tribunal known as the Y2575 group. So that is what has led to where we've got to, not he pūpū.
Okay. Moving on to another topic, this time Radio New Zealand reported earlier this week that Pharmac might withdraw all funding for drugs that treat children's children's cancer drugs after a complaint to the Human Rights Commission saying that the decision to, well, there hasn't been a decision to fund the Spinraza drug to treat spinal muscular atrophy. So has Pharmac officials briefed you why the Spinraza drug has not been approved?
No. Well, the advice I've got is that it is under consideration along with another drug. So that is, it is not correct to say that, you know, they are not being considered. They are. I think the story becomes somewhat distorted. The what Pharmac has said is that they started a review a couple of years ago, specifically in relation to paediatric oncology drugs, because there is a different process. There's an exceptions sort of process for them, because the drugs are supplied to a small number of people, it's children who with serious cancers, and the cost is, you know, comparatively small given the overall $1 billion a year budget that Pharmac has for buying pharmaceuticals. But they considered a couple of years ago that they should regularise the decision-making around the paediatric cancer drugs. The work they did was put on hold last year because of COVID. Then they got this complaint to the Human Rights Commission, and in the face of that decided they better have a look at it again. So the matter is now under review. No decision has been taken. What they have given an assurance, and they've given it to me through officials, is that whatever is available right now will continue to be available on current terms. Nothing will change in that respect. So this is about if there are new drugs that come on the market in the future, if they decide to change their approach, is that about how they process that? So that's what that was about. But other medications for other issues and conditions will go through the usual process. Now, one of the reasons why we set up the Pharmac review early this year was precisely because of complaints about the time it was taking to make decisions on new medications available. That work is underway. My expectation is that what we will get out of that is a Pharmac decision-making process that is much more agile, much more nimble, so that, you know, when new things do come on the market, we can look at it much more quickly and get them available if Pharmac decides to do so.
Okay, but will the Pharmac review look onto how the standards that Pharmac used to decide which drugs to approve?
Well, it's looking at Pharmac's decision-making processes overall. So they will look at it all, you know, the way Pharmac makes decisions. Presumably, they'll have the opportunity to look at paediatric oncology, because Pharmac is looking at that themselves anyway. So all of that will be looked at. In the end, what do we want? We want a pharmaceutical drug-buying agency that is operates on a principled basis, making the best decisions with the budget that they've got. And the reason we keep Pharmac at arm's length from politicians is precisely because we don't want the situation which we've had in the past, where politicians get prevailed upon by big, powerful, wealthy drug companies to, you know, have certain drugs purchased regardless of the science and, you know, comparative efficacy with other drugs available and what have you. So we have PharmAc to do that work and to do it at arm's length from the political process, so it can't be interfered with and the decisions will have a scientific evidential base.
Okay. Children's Commissioner Judge Andrew Beacroft said earlier that the decision he described as playing children like bargaining chips. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, the problem was when Andrew Beacroft said that, he wasn't aware of the full situation. He now is, and I don't think he's making any more comments.
Okay. Now, PharmAc, earlier, before this children's cancer drug story, were reporting a $400 million shortfall. Does the government have any plans to change its funding model?
I think what happened, some information got out that that PharmAc over time has looked at a range of drugs that it would, had the funds, would approve for use, but doesn't have the funds, so they are unfunded drugs. You could describe it as a shortfall. The reality is PharmAc's job, its statutory function, is to make decisions about treatments available for all, you know, a range of conditions within the budget that it's got, not to sort of say what it would like to have, even though it hasn't got the money for it. So, I mean, this government has increased the PharmAc budget in the last 3 years by 25%. That compares with the previous 3 years under the last term of the previous government, where it increased by less than 7% over that three-year period. We have put in additional money specifically to fund new cancer drugs, so we've been very alert to that. But the reality is, there will always be limits. The budget will always be finite. There is no open check when it comes to pharmaceuticals. If PharmAc funded every drug that they were asked to fund by lobby groups, pharmaceutical companies, advocacy groups, petitions to Parliament, it would have to double or treble its budget. And it is currently running at just over $1 billion a year. We don't have another $1 or $2 billion to put into it, and in a health system that is already costing $20 billion or 1/5 of government spending. So there are going to be limits, and we just have to make sure we're doing the best we can with what we've got.
Okay. My final topic for today will be about the human rights abuse motion that Parliament passed yesterday. Now, the ACT Party Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden, who moved that motion, wants to classify the situation that Uyghur Muslims are facing genocide in China, but the Labour Party has changed the wording from genocide to human rights abuses. So I kind of want to know, why did the caucus did that?
Well, no, it was a parliamentary motion, and there were MPs from a range of parties who, and the Labour Party was one of them, wanted to be clear about the language. The term genocide does have, I know this might sound silly in the kind of general conversation we have about these sorts of things. The term genocide in UN circles and institutions does have a very specific meaning. It has not been used very often when making findings about atrocities committed by countries on their own people. So Germany was found to have committed genocide on its Jewish population. Cambodia was found to have committed genocide on its population in the 70s, and Rwanda was found to have committed genocide on parts of its population in the 1990s. Those are the only times in which the UN has found genocide, because there is a kind of a high threshold to be met to justify that claim. We know that there are severe human rights abuses happening in Xinjiang province in China. That is very clear, and we should call that out. We have called that out, and this government called it out last year in conjunction with others. But I think one of the things we most want to do is work with the UN, with its agencies, and with other countries to get unfettered access to Xinjiang province, to establish for the benefit of the rest of the world what is happening there. We know, as I say, there are human rights abuses. I think we need to know the full extent of it. And that, of course, China is going to do everything they can to resist that, but that is what the call was for. But to do so in a way that means that we can tie in with the UN agencies and not predetermine the extent of the human rights abuses that we know are happening there.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.